everybody. Welcome to episode 647 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is an Aftershock Monday episode. It's also a 12 Days of the Comic Source episode. That means we have a prize up for grabs for this episode, and it is Animosity Volume 1 from writer Marguerite Bennett and artist Rafael De La Torre. It's a very popular series from Aftershock. The way you win, you need to retweet the tweet that announces this episode. Also, DM us the code word on Twitter, which I will be giving out later in the episode. So this Aftershock episode, I'm going to be talking about my favorite Aftershock series of all time. It's Replica, written by Paul Jenkins. We have art by Andy Clark, colors by Dan Brown, and letters by Clayton Cowles. I've done one Aftershock Spotlight episode on Replica, issue one, and now we're going to continue with issue two in hopes of drumming up more interest for this incredible series. I did hear Paul Jenkins recently on John Suntress's Word Balloon podcast saying that Replica is definitely coming back at some point. I think Paul had the first 50 issues planned out, and I would love to see it continue because I think only 5 or 6 issues came out, and it's such a great fun series, really complex with incredible art by Andy Clark, so I really would like to see it return. So we saw at the end of issue one that Trevor Churchill, who is the police officer on the Transfer, an intergalactic space station that's a melting pot of millions of different species of alien, Trevor's a police officer in charge of security for whatever reason. The powers that be have decided that human law will be the law that is the law of the land for this space station. But you have, as I said, millions of species of aliens, different cultures, different physiologies, different ways of perceiving the world. So you can imagine that a lot of them don't necessarily understand human law. To take it one step further, a lot of Trevor's colleagues don't necessarily understand human police procedures and rules and such. And so Trevor has had a hard time policing and effectively protecting and enforcing the laws, human laws that govern this station. So in the first issue, we saw that he decides to go to a cloning service to clone himself once to basically have somebody that he can talk to who will understand and who he can relate to and will handle a lot of the paperwork. Unfortunately, through a glitch, instead of one clone, he ends up with 49, I believe. So there are 50 Trevor Churchills in total. And we met a few of them last issue. And what's interesting is each of the clones sort of have different things that they're good at. They're different aspects of Trevor's personality, so to speak. And what's really fun is that Paul Jenkins decided when he was doing this series that he was going to feature on each issue of the first 50 issues, a different clone based on what the number of the issue was. So Trevor himself, 1A1 is his designation once he gets all the clones, one Adam one. He's on the cover of issue one, but issue two, the cover is number two, the second clone, or the first clone of the original, however you want to see it. Anyway, he's got a 2 tattooed on his forehead, so it's issue two. So he gets the cover, and Paul Jenkins, in his exercising his sense of humor, I guess you'd say, we actually don't see too much of number two because he's sitting on the toilet, probably going number two, and the bathroom stall outside the door has many things written on it in graffiti. So there's a lot of dual meanings for the number two, multiple meanings, and the issue starts out with Trevor, the original, talking about number two and what number two exhibits as far as the aspects of Trevor's personality that are dominant for number two. And number two also asked or requested in the middle-ish of last issue that he be referred to as Roger. And apparently, we learned in this issue, apparently he's applied for citizenship to be recognized as an individual rather than a clone of Trevor. So I'll refer to him as Roger from now on just to kind of differentiate from the original Trevor. So as I said, the original Trevor is narrating and he says this is number two. His hobbies include paperwork, more paperwork, and accidentally dropping all of his paperwork at inopportune moments. He has asked that we refer to him by name as Roger. We call him number two. He mentions that number two is a clone of him. He wasn't feeling very creative at the time. It's the second version of him, thus the name number two. And number two is appropriate considering the amount of crap this guy takes on the behalf of all the Trevors and all the Trevor clones. So if there's paperwork to be filed, two's their man. If there's angry warriors that show up at the precinct and they need somebody to be volunteered for diplomatic duty, it's number two. If there's a problem administratively that needs to be handled, number two is usually their man. So the problem that's currently facing Trevor Churchill is the fact that this ambassador has been killed. And so Trevor immediately puts number two in charge of the investigation, because this is a number two of epic proportions, the situation. And that's not number two referring to the clone, but number two referring to the waste, the human waste. So number two, Roger, is telling Trevor, none of this makes any sense. And Trevor's response is, well, considering our prime suspect's a jellyfish, I'd say that's the understatement of the year. So Trevor starts giving out orders. He wants Veet, who is a robotic colleague of Trevor's, to scan the leptin count in the atmosphere to see if somebody was able to somehow counteract their defenses. And Roger says, you can't counteract our defenses because the technology to dismantle leptonic surveillance system doesn't exist. It's got to be an inside job. And Veet makes some kind of point. We don't really know what it is because he only speaks in binary. But Trevor's response is, Veet's got a point. Can you make a note of that? And Trevor says, got it. Meanwhile, number four, who dresses like Sherlock Holmes and apparently is the best detective of the clones of Trevor, says, you know, I think we've stumbled onto something. The force of the blow combined with the angle suggests that this jellyfish ambassador couldn't have been the killer. And Trevor's like, yeah, right. Plus, he's a jellyfish. And Four says, but we are obliged to consider all possibilities. And Trevor's still trying to figure out how they busted through the perimeter. And there are 15 different races there that were all gathering on the transfer of the station to sign a peace accord. And suddenly everybody's deaf and blind. Number two, meanwhile, thinks it's an inside job. But whoever's responsible, it wasn't the jellyfish. It wasn't the Jul'Dani. So where are we keeping the witnesses, Trevor wants to know. Number two, Roger says, Vorgas has come back from traffic duty and he has the Jul'Dani in custody, protective custody, and all the other witnesses are out back. So Trevor instructs Roger to take over the paperwork from here. He's going to go see what he can find out. And Roger wants to know, why do I always get the paperwork? And Trevor's response is, of course, well, because you're good at it. So number four asks number two what he has in mind. And he says, yeah, I'm just not sure. Sorry, I'm a little frazzled. Let's just go by the book on this one. So he instructs four to see if he can find the projected angle of attack. Six, who's sort of the tech guy, is responsible for assembling all the surveillance images and see if they can pinpoint the time when they lost contact. And hopefully Trevor will be able to find something out, because the Scarlet's going to run rings around this if they're not careful. And the Scarlet are a race who seem to be very manipulative, and we'll learn more about them in a few pages here. So as number two, Roger's attempting to get a control of the crime scene, we see a ambassador show up, and Trevor says, let's send clone 38 and number five to the Jul'Danian embassy and see what they can find out. And as this ambassador approaches, we find out that she is Ambassador Brivel of the Gendar, and she's actually looking for Trevor. When Roger informs her that Trevor's not there, he says, okay, well, you'll have to do clone number two. There are forces at work that you humans don't really understand, and the reasons for this tragedy are complex. And I've been asked by Queen Kea of the Fornic homeworld to request an immediate audience. She awaits nearby and sent her men to escort you, and I need you to go speak with her immediately, because the fate of the transfer and perhaps even the galactic quadrant may rest on this decision. So Trevor agrees to go, and when he walks into the tent, which has been set up nearby, we see that this queen is maybe twice the size of Trevor. She's very, very tall. And she says, Detective Churchill of the Terran homeworld, I believe we have matters of utmost importance to discuss, but first, you must be aware that shortness is so highly prized among my species. It's the most desired sexual trait. And Roger's kind of taken aback by that. He's like, oh, hold on. He says, listen, I'm going to be frank with you. I want to have relations with you. I want to do things to your body that will hurt you in impossibly delicious ways. Trevor takes the opportunity, Roger takes the opportunity to drop his paperwork. So meanwhile, Trevor has hooked up with Vorgas, and we see that the Jul'Danian ambassador, this jellyfish-looking creature, still inside his containment tank, still projecting those words across the tank saying, I am guilty. And Trevor's not buying it. He says, you're not fooling anyone, ambassador. Either you tell us what actually happened, or we're going to walk you into a meeting with the Scarlet. The longer you hold out, the longer you have to stay in protective custody of my friend Vorgas here. So the Jul'Danian ambassador doesn't change his tune. So they head to the precinct to talk to Gariel, an ambassador of the Scarlet Empire. And Vorgas says, well, what do I do in the meantime? He says, you're just going to keep an eye on this guy. Don't drop him. Keep him safe. And Vorgas says, understood. Are we to perform the good policeman and evil policeman ritual again? And Trevor says, it's good cop, bad cop. And Vorgas wants to know which one he is. And Trevor responds, you'll be silent cop this time, okay? I'll handle it. So as they head to the precinct to meet with the Scarlet witness, Gariel, first he wants to know why he's been kept sitting there for 4 hours. Trevor says, well, you know, it's kind of tedious when you've got to clean up a murder. And Gariel's like, but I don't understand. You have your suspect in hand. And Trevor says, well, not yet. Gariel says, I assure you, this guy's guilty. His cowardly attack on the Qatarian emissary happened in front of more than 20 witnesses. Trevor's not buying it. He says, yeah, those witnesses, the Scarlet either paid them off or they threatened them. So Gariel's response to that is, I'm sure you think you know what you're doing here, Detective Churchill, but the reality is that you have little grasp of the technicalities. And he draws Trevor's attention to the treaty that governs the transfer, a certain paragraph, a certain clause. Trevor's like, what about it? And when Gariel starts to quote that, Veet's had enough, slams his fist down on the desk. Trevor's had enough as well. He's like, yeah, so what you're about to do, Gariel, is basically tell me about how the Scarlet are not governed by human laws while inside the transfer. But the fact of the matter is that this section of the transfer is under my jurisdiction, and human laws override anything else in the case of a homicide. And my Shadarian partner here, Vorgas, on the other hand, he works by his own rules, right? Not technically his own rules, just his own rules. And technically, I could have him rip your balls off. So Trevor is trying to cut through the bullshit, basically. He's trying to get to the truth, you know, regardless of whatever point of law or whatever bureaucratic nonsense or red tape Gariel is trying to hide behind. But Gariel's not swayed. He says, you know what? I'm going to make you an offer, Detective Churchill, and it's the only one you're going to get. Don't bother replaying the surveillance recordings because they've already been erased. Just as I blocked the surveillance of the Qatarian embassy, or emissary rather. And he also says, don't bother replaying the surveillance recordings because they've already been erased. Just as I blocked the surveillance of the Qatarian emissary's rather messy and untimely demise. Leave it alone, as is your place, and I'll ensure that your family's not slaughtered. But you, of course, are going to die anyway, but your family will be spared. Trevor turns to Vorgas and says, you know what? I can't be as overt as Ambassador Gartell here, but give me a phrase that rhymes with F you. To which Vorgas replies, duck chew? And Gariel gets up to leave and says, well, technically, Detective, the murder takes place on the landing pads, which since yesterday have been outside of your jurisdiction and within ours, thanks to the rewriting of our planetary laws, which we're prone to do at a moment's notice. So my advice is to take the Jul'Dan's confession, go about your business, because technically you're overmatched. So as you can see, the Scarlet are a race of manipulators. They're completely unscrupulous. They're not to be trusted. They change their laws on a whim to suit their needs. And they're pretty much scumbags. And they're the kind of people that you, or beings that you just love to hate. Like, you really want to see them get what's coming to them because they're just such dirtbags. And you can see the look on Trevor's face as Ambassador Guriel walks away. Trevor really wants to get this guy. And in the background, we see the Jul'Danian ambassador has a different message finally on his little pod that he exists in that says, "I wish to retract my confession." So Trevor calls him an asshole, walks back toward the crime scene, and asks Vorgas about knowing if the Scarlet had commissioned the Port Authority operations. And Vorgas says, "You know, I'm afraid I don't know much, Trevor," which may be the understatement of the year. And even Trevor doesn't go for the bait. I mean, he would expect him to give a smart remark about Vorgas saying he doesn't know much. But Trevor says, "You know what? It's not your fault, pal. These pricks change the rules to suit their needs, and there's nothing we can do about it. Not until we're willing to play them at their own game," which, again, you would love to see these guys get their comeuppance. So Trevor's asking number six and number four, "Where's two? He's supposed to be running this show." And four informs Trevor that some dignitaries from the Fornix arrived, and they said they have some information on the murder, and Roger's been over with them ever since. And Trevor's like, "Ah, that's surprising, because that's not really like Roger." Well, anyway, we've got our own problems. If the Scarlets are involved, all the rules are subject to change whenever, for whatever reason, however they want to change them. And then he asks where five is. And four says, "Well, two sent him to the Jul'Din embassy." Trevor's like, "Well, okay, send 38 with him." "What? Two already did that? Ah, great. Good. It's awesome." So meanwhile, Trevor says, "All right, Vorgas, you're on official protection duty. That means, and I want to make this really clear, that you do not drop the Jul'Din ambassador no matter what happens. Got it?" Vorgas says, "I'll protect the ambassador with my life." To which Trevor responds, "One can only hope." And then he tells the ambassador, "Well, it was a nice try. I'm sure you've got your reasons for going along with whatever the Scarlets are telling you. I'm sure you were coerced. But I got to tell you, I'm holding you as a material witness in protective custody until such time as the situation clears." Four is running the show until two gets back. Trevor and Vorgas leave. As they do, Trevor looks up toward the cameras and says, "I'm going to visit with some friends of mine." "You got that, assholes? I'm going to visit with some friends of mine." And he's speaking directly to the Scarlets, who we see are observing this situation. And they're kind of in their stronghold, I guess, with plenty of video feeds. And we see somebody in the shadows saying, "It's going to be a problem. Trust me, I know better than anyone. What do you want me to do?" And we see Ambassador Guriel say, "I want you to kill him, of course." And the shadowy figure says, "Fine by me, as long as you honor our arrangement. What about the others?" Guriel responds, "Kill them all." And I really have to believe by the silhouette that this is another clone. A clone that apparently wants to kill all the others. So no designation, no number yet. Maybe 13? Would that be an unlucky number? So meanwhile, Trevor has headed to a restaurant where there are these bears. They're apparently the Italian mafia of the transfer world. But what's interesting is these bears, they're very small, diminutive creatures. They're like the size of mice. And apparently, as I said, they are kind of similar to the mafia in this world. And Trevor informs them of what's gone on, about the Jul'Danian ambassador being in a predicament, and Trevor figures he would come to these restaurateurs because they seem to know everything, and Trevor implores them to be good citizens and help the ambassador out by providing him with the information he needs. And the bears are like, "Well, you know, we're civic-minded, of course, but we really don't know anything. You know, we're just simple, poor, tired restaurateurs." And Trevor's like, "Yeah, right. Look around. This restaurant's empty, and yet somehow you brought in millions of credits last year. So I know you guys have your ears to the street, almost literally, because you're so small and short and whatever, and I want to know what you know about the murder of the Qatarian emissary." So again, the bears kind of demur. They're like, "Well, much as we'd like to help you, it would be unscrupulous to betray the trust of anybody that may have confided in us. And again, Trevor's like, empty restaurant, 12 million credits. You want to talk to me about unscrupulous? How about if I investigate your scrawny little asses to find out all about your money laundering? I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse. Give me the skinny on what you know, or... And Trevor says, jerks his thumb back toward Vorgas and says, or I'll have my associate here legally tread on you. So he's literally threatening them with physical violence. So they converse among themselves and say, you know what? We've considered your offer and we're happy to cooperate. And we have it on good authority that the Scarlet themselves are responsible for yesterday's incident. But obviously we can't name sources. And I'm sure you already know. But did you know this Jolden here recently sponsored a bill recognizing the Katarian's right to annex an obscure piece of rock known as the Mulzch? M-Z-U-L-T-C-H. However you pronounce that. Mulzch? Not sure. But these little bears go on to say that it's a world that was destroyed by a cataclysm event a long time ago, and near total loss of life, only 67 members of the species survived. What does that have to do with the Scarlet? What does it have to do with this desolate rock? What does it have to do with the transfer? Just not sure what the significance of that is. And the bears say, despite their unfortunate near demise, they have been recognized as a member of the transfer, and I'm sure you're aware of the significance of that decision. And Trevor's not. And when he asks what the significance of that is, that's when the bears say, well, now that information, that is going to cost you. So back in Trevor's car, Vorgas is asking, what will this information cost? Did Trevor even get the information? We don't really know. And Trevor's response to Vorgas's question is, I don't know yet, but in these situations, the price is usually more than you bargained for. So Trevor calls in and says, hey, two, I need you to dig up everything you have on a race known as the Mulzeltich. Everything they have with their connections, specifically with the Kantarians and the Jul'dan. And Two seems a little bit out of sorts. He doesn't even respond. And Trevor's like, Two, are you there? And Two says, right, you are, Trev. Dream on. And Trevor says, well, he's acting weird. Does it have to do with this crazy alien sex he had with the queen? Probably so. But as Trevor's distracted, Vorgas yells, Trevor, look out. And his car is rammed by some sort of bulldozer-looking machine. And they're both Trevor and Vorgas are kind of thrown for a loop as the car's pretty much destroyed. And after the wreck comes to a stop, Trevor's telling Vorgas, whatever you do, don't drop the ambassador. Vorgas again says, I'll protect him with my life. But can I ask a question? Are we observing protocols? And Trevor says, no, we're not observing protocols. Because as he looks up, he sees this armored car that rammed them fire off a rocket or maybe a rocket-propelled grenade. It hits the car and explodes. And Trevor says, Vorgas, listen to me. Whatever you do, if there was ever a time for you to do that thing that Shardars do, now is the time. Do it. Like, go berserk. Kill these people. Vorgas says, but what about the ambassador? Trevor says, just shoot, preferably in the direction of the people shooting at us, and don't drop him. And so Vorgas starts channeling his abilities as a Shadar, saying, under the eyes of my people, by the souls of my forefathers, I'm blood sworn and duty bound. I protect my charge. May he never drop from my arms so long as I draw breath. And he starts firing back at these people, firing at them, screaming back, coward, you're dealing with Vorgas of the Shadar now. And he charges. He comes out from undercover and charges this guy. And Trevor's like, no, what are you doing? And Vorgas actually gets this armored car to retreat by firing at it. And he seems very proud of himself as the armored car takes off. And he says, Trevor, see, did you see that coward run? The Jul'dan remains in my charge unharmed. I did not drop him. He holds him up. And we hear a shot from far away with the blam. And the Jul'dan ambassador has been assassinated by a sniper, basically. And Trevor looks at him and says, "You effing idiot." And that's how the issue ends. Next, three's a crowd. So really easy to blame the Jul'dan ambassador, especially when he's no longer alive to defend himself. Clearly, it was politically motivated. It has to do with the Mulzatich, whatever they're called. It has to do with the Scarlet. It has to do with the politics of the system. And poor Trevor is caught in the middle. So again, it's my favorite series from Aftershock. It's just so much fun. Vorgas is just a riot, you know, as Paul Jenkins describes him, a box of rocks with the rocks taken out. We've got all the different clones with their different aspects of Trevor's personality. We have Trevor just trying to keep his head above water. We've got amazing art from Andy Clark. All the aliens look interesting. The color work is done extremely well also, being that it's science fiction based. You know, you would think Dan Brown would maybe go a little more muted, but based on the fact there's so much humor in the book, he tends to make it a little more primary, and it works really, really well. So I've said before when I covered the first issue how I feel like Andy Clark was made to draw sci-fi. I don't know that he should ever really draw anything else. The details of this station with all the detail in the background, the different aliens. I mean, it's just, it's done so, so well. And the other thing, the other big challenge for Andy is the fact that he draws the same guy, like this Trevor Churchill character, as well as all the other clones that are, you know, should look the same, but yet he does differentiate. He differentiates enough to so that you can see that they're different, whether it's facial hair or stubble. Some of them are balding. Some of them have shaved heads. It's just interesting how he's able to, even though it's the same guy and it's recognizable as the same guy, he does manage to make them each look distinct. Of course, the tattoo on the forehead, you know, helps out a lot. But it's just such an interesting story. And, you know, I talked about it when I covered the first issue, how we've only scratched the surface of this story. And that's why I'm so anxious for it to come back, because we in no way got to the bottom of the mystery of who killed the Qatarian ambassador. Why did they kill the Jul'danian ambassador who was initially accused? What's the Scarlet's role in this? And how far can Trevor push it? How much can he push back on these aliens that have diplomatic immunity? And can we see this, especially the Scarlets in general, but especially Ambassador Gulian, get his comeuppance? Like, he's just a character you just love to hate. I mean, even the way Andy Clark draws him, he's just annoying, and just there's something about the way his eyes are drawn that make you just immediately dislike him, and you can't wait for him to just get what's coming to him. So again, I think this is a brilliant series. I think that it got released a little ahead of its time. You know, it's tough being the first title from a new publisher. There's a lot of eyes on you in a way, because people want to see if it's high quality. But when it comes to the general public, most of them haven't heard of you yet. You know, now you come out with a new title from Aftershock and it gets much more attention from readers and from comic press, because they've been around, they're an award-winning publisher, and a lot of that was built on the backs of these first few series that were released that were such high quality that allowed the readers that did try them out to stick around. And then through word of mouth and just putting out such high quality books, and you know, you eventually reach a wider audience. But things like Super Zero and Black Eyed Kids and Replica that kind of kicked off the publisher really deserve a lot more credit than maybe they get. And I really want to see the return of titles like Super Zero, Black Eyed Kids, and especially Replica to comic stands, because, man, they're just so, so good. I just, you know, I've talked before about how this is my favorite series from Aftershock of all time, and I keep waiting for something to dethrone it, and nothing necessarily has yet, but I feel like some things have gotten close. But then I go back and I read these issues and I'm like, what am I talking about? Nothing has come close to being, for me, as enjoyable and as rich of a world that Paul Jenkins has created as Replica. It's just, it's so amazing. This is just a great comic. There's no doubt about it. It's just such good storytelling, interesting characters, funny, great art. It really needs to come back as soon as possible. I can't come back soon enough for my taste. And I know that I gush over it every time, but I can't help it. It's just such an amazing story. And, you know, I'm a sci-fi fan. I'm a comic fan. So this is kind of hitting all the sweet spots for me. So I highly recommend you all check it out. Pick it up on trade. Pick up the singles. Whatever you want to do, get out there on Twitter and tweet at Aftershock and at Paul Jenkins to make sure that we get Aftershock coming back sooner than later. So that's going to do it for this episode. This is a 12 Days of the Comic Source episode. As I mentioned before, we're going to be giving away Animosity, Volume 1 from Marguerite Bennett and Raphael Della Torre. And I think the code word that we're going to go for on this one is Vorgas. He's just such an interesting character, so fun. So be sure to retweet the tweet that announces this episode and send us a direct message with the secret code word, which is Vorgas, V-O-R-G-A-S, to be entered into the drawing to win that trade paperback of Animosity from Marguerite Bennett. So once again, I want to thank everybody for joining. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platforms you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.